Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and I am joined by two people who can't hear anything.
With us is
our co-host, Mr. Spencer Dedier Williams.
How dare you?
And with us also is our intern slash stenographer slash part-timer slash coffee bringer who brings no coffee. Intern Amy, who can't hear nothing.
Yeah, we've established that.
That
is true. I literally can't hear myself. So good luck, listeners. I'm sorry, and I appreciate you.
Well, that's not my problem. We have an interesting show for you today, as we're going to be talking about a recently dropped film that seemed to be very fun from the get-go and turned into an entire chaotic event. We'll get more into that as we dive into our review for Joyride. But before we do, Spencer, give us some opening credits.
Tune in each and every Thursday morning.
Thursdays.
From now on your favorite streaming platform.
Excuse me, Amy. Thursday?
Thursday.
Thank you.
I can't hear myself.
But that's not me, though.
No, it's not. That's why I'm waiting patiently.
So check us out on your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out over at our website where we have allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thriller. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, you can check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into each and every one of those places. Give us a subscribe or a listen. Follow us there. And let us know how we're doing. Give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes.
We'll give you the social links at the end of the episode. But yeah, Amy is having a little bit of trouble. So what is it that you can't hear?
I cannot hear me. I can hear both of you perfectly. I can hear the music perfectly. I cannot hear myself.
Somehow you've gotten quieter.
No, I haven't. I swear. Wait, was this a plan? Eddie, did you do this on purpose?
No, you just naturally do that for yourself. We have a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about... Can you hear yourself now?
Vaguely. But I'll take it. I'll take it. Just let it go.
No.
Well, either way, we are actually excited because this is going to be one of the first times in a little bit. We've had a little bit of a couple of snafus in the last few weeks of dropping episodes, but we're glad we're back and we're able to get content out to you guys. We're actually working with some brand new equipment here in the studio, and Amy is kind of having a little bit of issues over here today.
It's not my fault. I'm not the audio technician in this room. That would be you.
Slam!
And yet everything sounds fine on my end. You're the one who's not, taking care of your stuff. And probably it's probably just a user error kind of thing.
What? Wow. How could it be a user error thing when I have my headphones on my head?
Are you sure you put them on right?
Yeah.
The headphone part of the speaker goes towards your ear.
The part with the cable on this side that has the L says it goes in my left ear. Ooh.
Did you just learn that today? Good job, Spencer. I told you to go over those things with her.
This podcast will end in a murder.
Truth.
Let's guess who.
But no, in the time that we have been... kind of working through some things and getting things taken care of and fixed and whatnot. A lot of things have come up. We've had Comic-Con in the span of time that we've been gone. There's been a lot of trailer drops. Obviously, the strikes are still going, unfortunately. But, it's moving towards hopefully resolution soon. But did you happen to check out any of the stuff that came out of Comic-Con, Spencer?
Okay, so here's what happened.
Oh, boy.
Paramount released all the Star Trek trailers and stuff, and then I didn't care about anything else, so I saw nothing else. Like, we had some very exciting Star Trek times over this last weekend.
Didn't they actually drop an episode?
They dropped an episode where they did a crossover between their animated series and one of their live action series, and it was phenomenal.
Okay, hold on. It was between their live action and their animated show. Yes. So Strange Worlds and Below Decks.
Lower Decks.
Lower Decks.
Yeah. So the animated characters, they had took the voice actors for the animated, two of the animated characters, and threw them into live action. And they did such a phenomenal job in that show, because like you could tell that like they actually like paid attention to how their animated characters move, and they tried their best to like mime that and bring that into reality.
Aww. Yeah,
which seems like, I before I even saw it, I was like, that seems like that's going to be the hardest thing to do, but they did it flawlessly. It was a real love letter to Star Trek. And then they released the trailer for their musical episode that's coming out next week, which seems insane, and I'm very excited to see it.
I've been hearing a lot all over like social media and whatnot that everybody said that that episode was probably one of the best episodes that they've had in a long while.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yeah, it is, which is saying a lot, because the week before, we also had a very strong episode.
Yeah?
Yeah, they turned Spock fully human, and it was just nonsense from start to finish.
Excellent.
Really?
Yeah.
And so this is in Strange New Worlds?
Yeah.
Okay, so this isn't the animated show, this is a live action.
Yeah, this is a live action show.
So Spock is in the Strange New Worlds?
Yes, yeah, Strange New Worlds takes place 10 years before the original series. So you have Captain Pike in charge of the Enterprise,
yeah.
And you're getting like a few characters. You know, you have Spock, you have Ensign Uhura, who just signed up for communications. So she's like 22 at the beginning of her career. So
she's,
it's really cool.
Fresh out the academy.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know there was a lot of information coming out of Comic-Con in terms of non-big movie related news because of the fact that, like I said earlier, the strikes are still going on. But we did get a couple of glimpses of interesting things that did come about. We got the launch of Futurama, that the revival, I guess, if you want to call it a Futurama, coming back.
Did you watch it? I haven't watched it yet.
Yes.
I did watch the first. Did you watch it, Amy?
I did.
I did watch the first episode. It's very on the nose. The show itself tries to create that bridge from the series finale, the most recent series finale, and make a bridge to what they're doing now. But it doesn't fully translate well. I mean, it's only been the first episode. The first episode is essentially about the concerns of binging.
And streaming and binging.
With a streaming service known as Hulu. So I don't know. I mean, I know Futurama does a lot of like, you know, very on the nose type humor. They make points to really be about what's going on in the common day in the current time frame, you know, with trends and things like that and memes. I don't know. I guess I just need to see more to see if it's going to really live up to what we know as Futurama at the height of its, you know, popularity.
I feel like that's always been kind of true for Futurama. Whenever it reboots itself, like, you're like, is this going to work? And then, like, a few, like, maybe a season or two later, they put out some fantastic stuff, and you're like, Okay, this was definitely worth it.
Yeah, and it always seems like, they just need to get their feet under them. The thing is, though, and I may be in the minority of this, but the series finale, the most recent one, the series finale was perfect.
I am lost between series finales for this show. Which one is the most recent?
The most recent one was the one where Leela and Fry are essentially dating, and Fry wants to ask Leela to marry him. And all the while, the professor builds this button that reverses
time for
8 seconds or whatever. And everything gets stuck in this like infinite freeze of time. And
okay. That was fantastic.
Yeah, and I feel like that should have been it. That should have been the last of it. That should have been the finale. That should have been all done and said, and then they created this. I'm not. It's not anything wow worthy. Mm. I'm glad to see it back, but the other thing I do have to admit, you can definitively hear a lot of those voice actors who have aged.
Ugh, we're you know, Matt Groening has a consistent problem with that in his shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who's the voice of Fry and the professor?
Billy West.
Yeah. And I love Billy West to death. Mm-hmm. Billy West will always be a lot of the young people in TV shows of my youth between Doug Funny and, you know, Fry. But you can hear it. You can hear that he's struggling to get that, like, youthful sound for Fry in this one. I don't know. Who knows how it's going to pan out, but there was a ton of other stuff that came out of Comic-Con as well, including the trailer for the last film that Jason David Frank did, The Legend of the White Dragon, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't know they released a trailer for that.
Yeah, it seemed like they really wanted to garner towards the mindset of he's gone, but he's not forgotten. And there's like a little tagline at the end that says legends never die kind of thing. So that was unique. That was cool because there's a lot of different actors in that film that will really kind of add a little bit of gravitas to it. It's a Bat in the Sun production, which if you're not aware,
nice.
Yeah, that Anthony, the guy who heads Bat in the Sun, his team went, you know, total like for the grand slam of this to look great, and it does look good. So I'm interested in seeing how that goes.
Yeah, I have not heard from them in a long time, but they used to put out some amazing stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. And Jason David Frank collaborated with them like just about on everything. So. Mm. Ames, was there anything you saw at a Comic-Con that kind of wowed you? Took you by surprise?
No. Oof. See, and I think that was the problem for me this year, not because, besides the strike that's going on, which in all rights and ways is 100% important, and we stand behind the writers and the actors that are striking, there was nothing that I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for Comic-Con, but also I wasn't there, and for some reason I didn't feel like
missed out.
Yeah, no, I didn't. Not that I didn't miss out. It was just like I don't know. I mean, there wasn't a trailer for Percy Jackson, which is coming out on Disney Plus, which you know,
which makes sense because D23 does their own thing in September.
Exactly. There was more stuff that I saw in the back end that was coming from Hasbro. That I was kind of like, ooh, look, shiny new toys. But I didn't see anything from Weta. I didn't even see anything for comic books. I mean, technically, for the Eisners, which is the comic book world like equivalent of an Oscar, Rachel Smythe, who writes Lore Olympus, she won for Best Webtoon, which is amazing. The late Kevin Conroy and I cannot remember his writing partner. He won an Eisner for Best Short Story.
Oh, nice.
So that was really cool. And then, yeah, I didn't even check to see who won like Comic of the Year or anything like that. Like, and usually I'm 100% on top of that.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of why we pay you and bring you in. So
I'm not paid. I'm unpaid an intern.
Internship. I mean, it's the whole.
He just put himself on the air and on the hook to pay me now.
So HR's going to call you, Eddie.
Oh, no, it's leaning towards that, but we haven't yet crossed that threshold.
Paying me or HR?
Paying you. And I think, honestly, this may have been kind of the shock to Comic-Con culture to remind people, yes, it's great to have, you know, Robert Downey Jr. show up with an Iron Man gauntlet and throw roses out, or it's great to see the cast of, Steven Universe Rebecca Sugar, you know, do a song from the show or whatever. And it's great to have all that. But sometimes getting back to the basics of comic books and creators and individuals who help perpetuate the mentality of that sometimes isn't a bad thing. And I think with everything going on, I feel like that kind of gave everybody that little bit of shock of this is what Comic-Con would look like if it was operating how it used to back in the 70s and 80s. I don't know if that means that next year they're going to double down and try to be more bombastic, or if they're going to take, you know, any kind of initiative from this year and maybe give a little bit of breathing room to people who just go to these events to enjoy you know, the opportunity to know more about comic book publishers, comic book writers, see different artists, see different people in the industry, see people who inspire the industry, whether if it's through, like Amy had mentioned, Weta Works, or individuals like who sell a lot of this merch, like Entertainment Earth, or, you know, whoever it may be. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
So I'm really only familiar with the bombastic version of Comic-Con.
And that's okay.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I feel like just overall, like, con-wise, there's, like, a very slow reset just falling across the land, especially, yeah. Like, E3 is gone, and mm-hmm. people are doing their own things there, and I wonder if that might happen here, but I
feel like... Well, technically, it's already happening. I mean, because, as we mentioned... Mm. DC has the DC Universe Expo that they do online. You know, Marvel works through D23 for a lot of their stuff. So when D23 happens, you know, it's a whole shebang. Sony usually operates through Marvel and so forth whenever they're releasing those particular types of movies. I mean, all we need now is like a Lionsgate Con and a, you know, an A24 Expo, and we'll be all set. Because it seems like, you're right, everybody's doing their own thing, and it's minimizing the bombastic aspect of Comic-Con for a lot of people, to where it's just, you know, hey, let's go check out these booths. Let's go check out these creators. Let's go check out these people who are trying to make a buck, these comic book sellers and so forth. So,
I mean, the cool thing about that, though, is if like Comic-Con can still hold on to like the comic books and like that kind of stuff, it could be a thing that people could actually, you know, go to again.
Yeah. And it'd be affordable to a lot of people.
And that's something that I can kind of speak to, because when we talk about, not just uh-huh. affordability, but with comic books and cons in general, San Diego has kind of made itself into the pop culture con. Like, it's bombastic. It's big, like Spencer said. But when you talk about the other cons that are up the coast, you have Rose City that's out of Portland, and you have Emerald City, which is out of Seattle. And Emerald City is heavily involved in being specifically aimed at comic books, comic book industry. And it feels... has some of the same presence as Comic-Con, but none of like the creative everybody in the studio show up type of vibes. So you get to celebrate and meet comic book writers, letterers, colorists, creators, and you can actually go to their tables and have conversations with them. And it's really kind of neat, and it helps you engage, but it also gives you an opportunity to see the people behind the books.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of changes coming on the horizon, and with the strikes happening, and seeing as what's going to, you know, be on the horizon for whatever these other entities are trying to put out, as well as Comic-Con realizing, you know what, they probably didn't get as many people as they wanted due to like the strikes or whatever, whatnot. Who knows how things are going to go. So, but transitioning over into our review, we are going to be talking about the recently dropped and very bombastic, as the keyword of the day, film 2023's Joyride. This movie really did give us a different perspective on what a comedy, buddy comedy road trip picture might be. This is one of those movies where it may seem innocent, but it is very much in the vein of a lot of the Hangover movies and so forth. So this is a R-rated film for a reason. I just wanted to make sure that we stipulate that. So before we dive into any more, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
When Audrey's business trip to Asia goes sideways, she enlists the aid of Lolo, her irreverent childhood best friend, who also happens to be a hot mess. Kat, her college friend turned Chinese soap opera star, and Deadeye, Lolo's eccentric cousin. Their no holds barred epic experience becomes a journey of bonding, friendship, belonging, and wild debauchery that reveals the universal truth of what it means to know and love who you are.
Directed by Adele Lim in her feature directorial debut, and written by Sherry Shavaprava Dumrong and Teresa Hisao. From a story by Lim Shevapravandumrung and Hsiao, the film stars Ashley Park, Sherry Cola, Stephanie Hsu, and Sabrina Wu, with Ronnie Chang, Meredith Hagner, David Denman, Annie Momolo, Timothy Simons, and Daniel Dae Kim, all appearing in supporting roles. The movie's title and tagline, Joyride, Four Friends, One Trip, No Luck, shares key thematic words from the title of another acclaimed movie about four Chinese-American women, The Joy Luck Club, from 1993, where in both films, a main character returns to China to connect with long-lost members of their birth family. Another piece of information, Stephanie Hsu and Ronnie Chang previously both appeared in Marvel's Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings back in 2021. I don't recall Stephanie Hsu being in...
I don't recall Ronnie Chang being in that movie.
Ronnie Chang was the... So do you remember the sister to Shang-Chi?
Yes.
You remember her henchman, her like right-hand guy?
That's Ronnie Chang.
That was Ronnie Chang.
Yeah. But I do remember because he was in the elevator telling him about all the different things when you come through. I'm chiming in.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry, I got the look. Well, I got the look.
No, you
I
didn't. Got the you're look. Doing great.
I don't remember Stephanie Hsu being in that.
I think she was the married friend at the beginning or at the end that Shang-Chi and Awkwafina sit down and they're at the bar and they're telling this entire story and mm-hmm. it's
no, I
their
remember
friend
them.
And it's their they're... friend and the married friend and then Wong does the thing and she's like,
Yeah. Well, before we move forward, we do have a statement. Now, obviously, as we mentioned with the riots and the strikes.
I'm supposed to say, what?
It's
with
happened.
The union strikes and everything going on. We do want to make sure that you know that we do stand here as the Film Lossers. We do stand in solidarity with all the actors and writers that are currently picketing and pushing for fair pay and better wages and so much more that they deserve as they continue their work. So there is a statement we would like to say before we continue. This piece was written during the 2023 WGA and SAG-AFTRA strikes. Without the labor of the writers and actors currently on strike, this movie, as well as any other series, film, whatever project being covered here, wouldn't exist. So we do want to make sure that we make that statement clear. We do stand in solidarity with them. There have been conversations with several key people within the strikes, and the general census is that it is still okay for people like us to continue to review these films as they were all created and written and so forth before the actual strike started. So
also we're not employed or getting any type of money for our opinions.
Yeah, we are not benefiting from any of these promotions. However, as I stated, these are all films, projects, so forth that have been created prior to. So we are promoting them as, you know, we still want to drive, you know, financial gain towards like the theaters and towards the individuals who are, you know, a part of these projects. We do want to make sure that they still get noticed and recognized. But moving forward, let's go ahead and talk about this film. And obviously, we are going to talk about spoilers. So this is your first and only warning. Spoiler alert. Right, Amy?
Yes.
Over here. Are you busy over there?
I'm just watching people complaining about things and realizing they actually didn't watch the movie.
So let's talk expectations. Honestly, this movie, there's not a lot of like precedence going into this film in terms of like, oh, this is a part of a saga. Like, because it seems like the more and more we talk about films in a consistent rate, the majority of them do seem to be part of either a saga, a series, an overall franchise, something to that effect. This is one of the movies, one of the few movies this year that we're reviewing that isn't technically a part of a larger franchise or a larger, you know, saga, and it's an original film, obviously.
Good on them for making something original.
Yeah, exactly. in a world full of sequels, we applaud you for being an okay original. but with that said, let's talk expectations. I want to start with Amy because I believe Amy was the one who actually turned us on to this film, number one, and number two, she was kind of the driving force for why we decided to watch this film and review it.
I'm a driving force now?
driving force.
I thought it was a pun because it's Joyride is the title. Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
Expectations. I really actually didn't have much of one. I kind of wanted to see where this was going. Yes, I've seen the Joy Luck Club, though it was far too late, according to Eddie, after I'd seen it. But this was kind of, I didn't really have a big expectation, so I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move over to Spencer. What were some of your expectations going into this film? Because as Amy stated, she didn't really have many, surprisingly. Honestly, you did talk up this movie, and so we were kind of led by your push.
It's the first directorial debut of the co-writer for Crazy Rich Asians and Raya the Last Dragon. And yeah, so
she could have said all those things and she's like, I don't know. Spencer, give us your thoughts.
Okay, so basically, I was wondering why we were reviewing such an old movie.
I'm pointing at, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, because I was like, oh yeah, this came out when I was in high school and stuff. And so it's like, I'm vaguely familiar with this. I'm like, so yeah, I did a Google.
Wait, are you talking about the Paul Walker, Steve Zane movie?
Yes, that's the movie.
Oh, I love
it's
that movie.
Joyride. It's called Joyride. I've never seen that movie.
Here's the difference though. I was thinking about this because I thought that too. That movie, Joyride, mm-hmm. is one word.
Oh.
This one. Two words.
See, here's the thing. I didn't. The only context I had was seeing this in the list of things we were doing, so I did not make that connection. And then when I finally actually Googled it, I was like, "Oh, there's a new movie that makes
this
much
would have
more
been
sense.
Weird if this movie was a remake of that movie." Trailers were totally going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, but I'd seen literally nothing of it. So when I found out I was wrong, I was like, "Okay, I know nothing, and I'm going into this knowing nothing."
Oh, you know what? You, Amy, actually, I'm pointing, my finger points.
Yeah, but it's in my direction. Started speaking. Sorry, go.
You did mention that during the course of, while we were preparing to see this film, you were talking up about Stephanie Hsu.
Yeah.
That was, honestly, I think that was the main thing that you had mentioned during conversations about this film, that was one of the reasons why you wanted to see it, because you're a fan of Stephanie Hsu, which we'll get into the particulars.
Yeah, but still, expectations. I don't know what to expect. That's the fun part for me. I go in and be like, I don't know. It's going to be fun.
That's it. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun.
Okay.
I'll get yelled at later, but it'll be fun.
In terms of expectations for me, I'm not a big fan of just random films there was a time when movies were thrown together just for the sheer fact of them pushing the boundary of how many times they can cuss, how many times they can do this. You take a look at that entire era of like the early 2000s, you had like Old School, you had Euro Trip, you had Road Trip, you had Sex Drive, you had like all these movies that were in that same vein, you know, and they were all kind of geared towards, let's just, you know, push the pedal to the metal and see how far we can get with the censors before we get, you know, in either an unrating or an NC-17 rating, you know. And that was kind of the mindset coming into this film, because I knew of Stephanie Hsu because we got a remarkable performance from her in Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about it. Like, I didn't know anybody else who was in the movie. I didn't know Ronnie Chang was in the film. There was a lot of, and this probably goes to the other part, there was a lot of, like, you know, cultural stereotyping in the film. Even though they're Asian, it's like you go in and, I'm not Asian, is it okay for me to laugh? Like, I'm trying to be careful, because I mean, you never know these days, people can, you know, say things, and then why are you laughing at that? You don't even truly understand the whole, like, I didn't want to get into that kind of conversation mm-hmm. with anybody. And I just wanted, and I actually had the same kind of mindset going into like Crazy Rich Asians, because there was a lot regarding like culture and tradition that I wasn't aware of, that I still don't know. But I still had a good time. I wasn't aware, as Amy pointed out, that Adele Lim, who is the director of this film, was a co-writer for that one. So that's interesting to know after the fact. But No, no, no. I'm not saying it's your fault. I just, I didn't know it until after the fact.
Making this face with my arms up in the air. Just like,
ugh. Interns. So honestly, my only expectation coming into this was I was hoping that it wasn't going to be like those movies before. Just, you know, American Pie-esque, you know, move to this direction. Let's insert sex, you know, drugs, you know, graphic language, everything else in between, and see, you know, if we can make it all fit to make a journey for somebody to enjoy. Which honestly is literally the premise for that new dog film, Stray. That's literally what that movie's about. Yeah. So it's like, oh my God. And I think that might have been a part of mine, like, oh my gosh, they're doing like, you know, ensemble cast films. And they're just doing, they're going to start redoing all that crap. I don't like the Hangover movies. The Hangover movies weren't really all that fun to me.
The first one was interesting. I can say that because it kind of set a tone. But other than that, I never saw any of the other ones because I didn't feel like it was necessary.
Same.
Yeah. I for the curiosity of film and understanding things, I did see three of them. I don't think I saw the fourth one. I did see three
for
of them.
Curiosity?
Well, because of the fact that as a critic, you need to understand what it is that people are trying to sell to the masses and what is it that makes them so popular. I couldn't find anything about it in any of those movies other than Zach Galifianakis is an idiot every time he's in the film. I'm not saying the person is, but his character is always an idiot. No. And Bradley Cooper is a smug jerk. Like, that's the only thing. And what's his name? The guy who plays... Andy Bernard.
Ed Helms.
Ed Helms.
Who is a delight. Seems like a delightful human just in general.
I mean, the things that they made this man go through in this movie, I mean, hey, you know, more power to him. Because by that third one, I'm like, I think I'm done with these movies. They're in Thailand. Lots of things can happen. And all those things happen to Ed Helms. So
poor Ed Helms.
Yeah, but... That was my mindset going in. I didn't want it to be like one of those. So after the fact, we saw the film out of the theaters. First impressions. Let's go, Amy.
I had the giggles, and that was a it was an okay movie. I'm okay with this. Do I need a second one? Not necessarily. I appreciated this, and I have other things to talk about later.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't need a second one.
Yeah, either. And I have other things to talk about later in the scope of this movie. But
she's trying to shut us up.
No, got I'm it. Trying to shut myself up. I'm practicing.
You're doing a great job.
I'm practicing. Spencer, help.
Yeah, so coming out of this movie, I was like...
You have the faces too. Nobody can see them.
Yeah. It was just like a lot of... This... I came in expecting nothing, and I got... So. Let's put it as an eyeful that I was not expecting.
That's one way to put it. I have to agree with Spencer. I mean, there was the expectations that I did have, and thankfully it wasn't that. Yet it was something else entirely that I, through the process of this conversation, maybe I'll get a better idea of where I fall in the category of whether or not it's something that ended out good or ended out, you know, not good.
A woo or a boo?
Oh my God. So let's dive into this conversation, shall we? And obviously the first thing I do want to talk about are some of the performers in this film. We have the lead role, the main lead role played by, Ashley Park. Mm-hmm. I don't recall seeing her. So here's the thing. I'm not very familiar with a lot of Asian actresses and actors. I know a lot of the mainstay ones. But as far as like, younger ones, I you know, whether if they're popular in TV shows, whether if they were Disney show kids, whether if they were, I mean, there are some out there, you know.
They are, but this is not Brenda Song.
Okay, Sweet Life of Zach and Cody?
There you go.
Okay. See? So I don't know softball. Where a lot of these come in, but I do have to say the chemistry that a lot of these performers had in this film seemed very natural. It seemed very,
yes, that's right.
It seemed very, you know, unique to not only their culture, but even just their friend dynamic. And I really did appreciate that. I for one, really loved Sherry Cola's role in this film. She plays Lolo, the best friend to the main character. And I felt like she was kind of like this, you know, move with the waves and really kind of tried to be the rock for everybody at some point, but knew how to have fun. And whether if that's the actress's real personality or just for the film, either way, she made it seem seamless. Mm-hmm. And I got to give her props. What about you, Ames? Is there anybody you want to highlight?
Of course. And this is one of the most divided characters of this movie. Sabrina Wu as Deadeye.
Yes.
Which they are just, they teeter on the space of like, I'm sorry, what? Like it's cringe and not cringe on some occasions. And then there's this earnesty in the performance where Sabrina does just a great job of being like, I'm here to make friends. I'm here to make friends. And then it's like, oh, I'm being really awkward and nobody's going to like me. And like, it is reminiscent of a couple of people that I know in real life. Mm. And I was like, oh no. Oh no. Help.
It's a glimpse of the future.
It's a glimpse. But yeah, Sabrina as Deadeye is probably just one of those things that they're going to be hit or miss for you in terms of personality and tone. And then go figure, they're actually a comedian. Like, they started watching, Gabriel Iglesias when they were 16 and decided they wanted to do stand-up.
What was his name?
Gabriel Iglesias.
It's not Iglesias. It's Iglesias.
Okay, I can't do it. Thank you.
I just needed to make sure, because I'm like, if you're going to try to appropriate my culture here. It's Iglesias.
I'm Mexican.
I know.
You're Puerto Rican. Calm down.
And that's why I say fluffy.
Yes. But they saw that special and decided they wanted to be a comedian. And then
how long have they been doing stand-up, do you know?
They were premiered on The Tonight Show in 2020, I think.
Okay.
So it's fairly recent, but I've seen some of their stand-up and they integrate a lot of the Mandarin and like their personality as a whole, and it's fairly across the board the same. And I'm like, okay, we're here for this. Let's go, I guess. So yeah, I really appreciated Sabrina. What about you, Spencer?
I also appreciated Sabrina. She was they were my favorite in this movie. I just like at a certain point, Stephanie Hsu's characters asked them, so why are you named Deadeye? And just the deadpan face response that followed. I was like, okay, this is actually an amazing character. So I really like them.
Yeah.
Another person I'm going to put out there is Stephanie Hsu.
Yep.
Yes.
She has range. Mm-hmm. She can be in a lot of things and she just works it. So I definitely appreciate seeing her here.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I think Stephanie Hsu is one of those particular actresses who is just becoming more and more of a mainstay name. I know she's gotten her start in a lot of other things, but some of her more notable things as of late has been, you know, in the latter seasons of The Marvelous Miss Maisel. Mm-hmm. She was in The Incredible Everything Everywhere All at Once. She did appear in the American Born Chinese series on Disney+. She's done a lot, and seeing her in this film, if you didn't really know her eclectic body of work, you would think she's only able to do comedy, but she does. She's so multifaceted.
Well, she was on Broadway actually in the SpongeBob musical as Karen the computer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
100%. Oh, that's interesting.
So in other words, if you get your hands on that one that Nickelodeon put out, you can see her.
Is she in that one?
Yeah.
Like that particular performance one?
Yeah. She was the original. She was the originator. So that original cast. And then also she was in Be More Chill, which has a song titled Michael in the Bathroom.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. But Stephanie Hsu is just a standard performer. And in this film, you do get really that kind of full range that you come to know her by. So this is a good, you know, performance for her to really express that range. And honestly, I really do hope that she continues to do a lot more projects in the near future, whether if it be like Asian focused or even just in general, just a great character actor, because that's what she is. She's a phenomenal character actor. And I know a lot of what she has done thus far has been more focused towards in terms of film, because obviously it sounds like on Broadway, she's got a little bit more, nuance and so forth. But it seems like in a lot of the films that she's done thus far, it has been more Asian focused. It had been more focused on her, you know, ethnicity as opposed to her ability.
Yeah. And Maisel was the same way.
Yeah. Cause she came from that. She's introduced in from the Chinatown part of New York and so forth. Yeah, I really hope to continue to see more of her, and I want to see her stretch outside of that, you know, that bubble, you know, because once you get everybody knows in Hollywood, once you get typecasted, that's ultimately what you get hired for every time.
True. And then I want to speak really quickly to Audrey Park, even though you guys don't know her. If you are a fan or have seen Emily in Paris on Netflix, Audrey Park is actually the best friend in there. She plays a nanny who had dreams of being a singer and moved to Paris, and she is avoiding her parents. I vaguely remember. I only watched the first season of Emily in Paris, but she does sing in that as well.
Hmm. Which, I mean, this film also highlights, because I'm more than certain that that was actually her voice. It does highlight like her ability to play in, you know, in the parts, in harmony, which is really cool to know that she does that. As well as Stephanie Hsu. Mm-hmm. There's just really talented people in this film that you don't really know offhand if you didn't do your research or if you weren't aware, i.e. me. moving forward through that, was there anybody else you guys wanted to highlight? It was good seeing what's his name from The Office in this one.
Daryl. He was another.
Spencer, you're the man in the chair. What you got?
I'm trying to find his specific Office filmography.
He's from the first season.
Roy.
Roy. Sorry, yes. He's always with Daryl. We appreciate it, Daryl. Yeah. Though.
It was good seeing him in this one. And honestly, I liked a lot of the inclusion of different aspects of everything that went on in this film. As we talk about like the story, this movie does delve into some, you know, some parts that might not be okay for younger children.
Are not okay for younger children.
Some parts are not okay, and most parts are definitely. Because there's some things that happen in this film that are like, no. But in terms of the story, how did you guys feel the story flowed? Because for me, I personally felt the movie had fluidity to it. Like, I felt like the story pushed forward at an even pace. It didn't stick in one place for too long. Yes, it moved all throughout China, or all throughout Asia, to be more specific. But it wasn't necessarily about where they were. It was about the journey that they were carrying. Mm-hmm. So how did you guys feel?
It was not one of those movies where I'm like, how much longer is this movie? Like, I had like a good time, even if I was befuddled by whatever was happening on screen. But like, this is also not one of those movies where it's like, oh, you know what the end goal is. You like, the goalpost moves like throughout the movie on like, oh, well, we have to do this. Oh, we're doing this and via this. Okay, forget about this. We're doing that now. And so like, really, like while you're watching your movie, you're just like, what is the goal here? Like, but like, it's a fun journey, yeah, though, of figuring what that is.
and the fact that it's only an hour and 35 minutes long, that does speak well to like the ability to create that cohesive type of storytelling without bombarding you or keeping you in one place. When you look at most films nowadays, I mean, for God's sakes, Oppenheimer is out in theaters and that movie is 3 hours plus long. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid, but it's one of those things where it's like, it's what you come to expect nowadays. You go into a movie, like we went to go see Beau Is Afraid, and I believe Beau Is Afraid was like 3 hours long as well.
Yes.
Yeah, it was.
Beau Was Afraid for too long.
Yeah.
Beau was aggressively afraid for too long.
And it feels like with a lot of movies nowadays, that's kind of the expectation. It's got to be at least 2 hours. And with this one, it being only an hour 35, it moved and it flowed and the story had consistency. And I felt like the care that it took in this film to create opportunities not only to address stereotypes, but even to address certain things that even minorities do on a regular level was very thoughtful and very unique to this film. Because most times when you look at films like this, the goal is to either make fun of the majority and the minority being the only smart people in the room kind of thing moving forward. But in actuality, us minorities are dumb sometimes, mm-hmm. and we make mistakes. And there's a lot of that going through in this film in terms of the decision making and the progress of our characters. There's an instance where the ignorance, if you will, of Audrey Park's character, Audrey?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Audrey Park's character chooses to sit in a train car that has an American woman because all the other ones had Asian individuals in them and she didn't feel safe. Mm-hmm. And so she found one that had an American, and that American happened to be a drug dealer, which you see in the trailer, and it leads to one of the most craziest scenes out of all of them. But the truth of the matter is, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I have been on trips over borders and in other places, and I have gone places to where being either Hispanic or Latino, if you're in Mexico and you go places, you're like, I don't really know. Oh, look, there's a group of, Americans, or there's a group of, for lack of a better term, white people. Like, you're like, oh, maybe that's a safe area to go. And you use your ignorance to determine how you base your logic. And it's like, no, just because they look like people back from home doesn't mean that they're the safest bet, because people are people, yeah. And I think that's one of the biggest things that this movie tries to help people understand. Is that even though you feel comfortable in your mind, sometimes you have to use intelligence to make better decisions.
Well, and I also think this kind of comes with the caveat and the understanding that Audrey has been trying to shoehorn herself into every place she thinks she's supposed to fit is where she should be. She's raised by white parents. She is an aggressive overachiever.
Mm-hmm.
She's a lawyer, or she's an associate and an all male firm. And when we meet her as grown up lawyer, she's playing squash with her boss. And it's all like, yeah, guys, whatever. Like, she's so aggressively trying to be one of the guys that there is no space for her to just be herself.
Yeah.
And not worry about, being, the not only the overachieving woman, but the successful Asian woman in there.
Well, and also, not to cut you off, but also in that same instance, the filmmakers and the writers also try to highlight the fact that there is an aggressive overemphasis on people who it can come naturally. You don't have to force it, but an overemphasis of like the aggressive nature of, oh, and I'm PC, I'm doing this and that.
And I
donated to this fund for Asian growth, or I donated this fund for like black communities or whatever. And it's like, we know people like that, because honestly, everybody here at this table were minorities. And it's one of those things where you've had those moments where people are saying things, and then they say something and they're like, oh, but I my black friend really enjoys that joke. Don't worry. But whatever. And it's like, I didn't even ask, like, but no, it's like your guilty conscience got the better of you, buddy. But there's situations that happen. I mean, we all work in corporate settings here at this table.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always one of those situations where I know I've had conversations with higher ups or individuals who are like, well, we need to show diversity in this. But I don't want it plastered. I don't want whatever. But we still need to, make sure that, that this community is whatever. And it's like, I get what you're saying, but if we just work naturally, it'll work out. Trust me. And it's just funny how society puts themselves in that sensitive area. It is not the minority groups who push people to be like, oh, you're not making sure that this and this and that, or you're not making sure you're this and that. Obviously, in extreme situations, we do, but we're just living life, and it's people who choose to allow themselves to walk on eggshells so that they can have a difficult time. Like, oh, it's so difficult because it's just everything's so woke and everything's so like, funny enough, I had a conversation with someone the last couple of days. I've had a conversation with this person regarding an upcoming film we're going to be reviewing, Barbie, and the whole nature of why they don't want to go see it because they're worried that it'll be too man bashing, and
they're female.
They're a female. They're a woman, identify as a female. They're female, and it's like, you're a woman. Like, you have been bashed in everything in terms of every form of media for the last, however long media has been around. I'm pretty sure there's a cave drawing somewhere of a woman being pushed into the kitchen so that she can finish cooking dinner. Like, I, you know.
It's entertaining to think about it, but the logistics in my head were like, that's aggressive.
Cook, saber tooth, stay in kitchen. Like, I don't know. Like, there's probably stuff like out there, but the fact that there was this conversation I was having with someone, they're like, well, I believe that, you know, men are the authority and we shouldn't be this not. And I'm thinking, and I'm like, why are you getting to this place? How did you get to this place in life where you feel like you have to defend the thing that doesn't need to be defended? You know, just let it be. And if people choose to create this or people choose to do X, Y, and Z, let them create. And you don't need to make it a social conversation. Just if you enjoy it, enjoy it. If you don't, then move on.
See, and that's some of the things that I've been seeing surrounding Joyride. Not only is it it's a literal raunchy, people like it's raunchy, it's brass, but you're coming to see a lot of men that are like, there was one guy, no joke, I read this review and I started laughing. He's like, there were too many men taking their shirts off, and me being a hetero male, I found that really uncomfortable.
Oh my god.
Yes. And I was like, yes. And he's like, these women, they're so sex crazed, and I don't understand why they're doing this. And he goes, and they're not funny, and they're more annoying. And I was just like, first off, when the first thing that your complaint is that men are taking off their shirts way too much and flashing men's skin is upsetting you, and that's the first thing, literally, he had it bulleted. It was the very first one. I was like, I can't take you seriously. This is great.
Well, and even so, with that said, it's more like, are you sure you're hetero? If that's the first thing that you're not.
And that's the thing that makes you so uncomfortable. But I think that's part of the thing I wanted to kind of drive at.
I'm like, it makes you wonder like how uncomfortable he is when he takes off his own shirt and changes. Like, I can't see this because it's going to make me disturbed.
Close your eyes. But I wanted to point this out because you talked about the hangover and how the hangover was this massive thing and everything else. And it was for white males. Mm-hmm. And they went through literally a ridiculous cacophony of absurd, raunchy humor. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, when it's four Asian women doing the exact same thing, you're like, oh my gosh, this is not only is this disgusting, but this is wrong and crass. And there was one, oh my gosh, somebody had said that people were giving in. The Rotten Tomatoes scores, I think, was like 91% or something like that. And they're like, oh, the critics and everyone are giving in to the hype of this, and it's just terrible. And I was like, so it's okay if it's a man doing it.
Yeah.
It's okay if it's a white man doing it.
Well, and even then.
Well, okay, because like, if I might be wrong on this, but if memory serves, I feel like The Hangover was the raunchier movie of the two of these.
Yeah.
Oh, you have no idea, my friend.
It's been a long time since I've seen that.
No. The first one was raunchy. The second one was raunchier. The third one was... they had to make two versions of it. They had to make the regular version for theater and then the unrated version.
That's a bad sign.
See, and that's... I'm like, where does... First off, if the movie is not for you, then don't watch it. You don't have to. But also don't come off and the person, by the way, that said that, you know, this is the worst thing he's ever seen. He had also said that Adele Lim should stay away from directing and get out of the business. And I was like, I'm sorry, who in the fresh heck are you, bro? Because I'm like, if you don't like it, just back off. Like, don't have to watch it.
And here's the thing. You take a look, and I wasn't lying when I told this woman, there is a history of cinema that essentially just either over-sexualizes or belittles or even diminishes the value of women on screen. You take a look at the entire, like, almost cinematography of the 70s and everything in that. I mean, you got people who, you can't even watch comedies during the 70s without... there being people who are flashing their breasts or people who are running around naked for the fact that they can. The idea of the dumb blonde came from cinema. The idea from about women, you know, being, and thankfully we've had a lot of great strides and a lot of great, legendary actresses to really help break that mold. But for a good amount of time, most of the women in these films were either they were wives, They were shopkeepers. They were people of low status, and they were belittled. They were hit. They were beat. I mean, the whole idea of, you know, one more time, Alice, pow, right to the moon. Like, that was in a TV show. Someone threatened his own wife to send her to the moon with a punch in a TV show, and they laughed.
Anymore,
you know, and it's just the fact that it is so hard for people to understand that women deserve where they are now and then some. And the fact that we just, as a society, are just not comfortable giving up the reins of something that has been male driven for X amount of years, it's ridiculous. It's idiocracy. Yeah. And
sorry.
And it's just, it just shows where the mindset and maturity of a lot of people who are going to see films are now. Mind you, there are a ton of people. I mean, you take a look, even in this film, Daniel Day Kim is one of the most
soothing tea to my heart.
Yep. Oh.
But he is an
outstanding. Sorry, I didn't mean to make that sound racist, but he was just so good.
He is a phenomenal actor, and he has done everything from live action to voice work. We talked about him in the film that we reviewed. It starts with an M. Minari or no?
Mirai.
He played the grandfather in that one.
On the motorcycle.
Yeah. And he was phenomenal. He's done everything. And the fact that he's a part of this and he supports it, it's like, yeah, there are spots in cinema. There are places in cinema that this can reside and exist, and it should. And the fact that there are people out there who try to diminish that only prove how antiquated a lot of people's mindsets are in this effort. You know, Greta Gerwig is right now killing it in the theaters with Barbie. You know, Adele Lim knocking it out of the park, not only with her writing ability, but now with her directing ability. I mean, we have Kathryn Bigelow, who is a, you know, just a big name in the entire, you know, there are so many different names. And honestly, it's befuddling how people still see all the work that has been done and all the efforts that have been done from every actress from the 50s and 60s who said, no, I don't want to just be, you know, eye candy in the film. I want to have a substantial role, all the way up until recently with people like Stephanie Hsu, Audrey Park, you know, Sherry Cola, Sabrina Wu, people in this film who can obviously stand toe to toe with Bradley Cooper, Ed Helms, you know, Zach Galifianakis, who can actually show that there is, you know, there is power in this and there's value in this.
Yeah. I think that the other thing, going back to talking about the perpetuation of women in film, one of my favorite films is called How to Marry a Millionaire. It's Marilyn Monroe and Lauren Bacall. Mm-hmm. And I'm always missing the third. I'm so sorry, but it's two blondes and Lauren Bacall is the brunette. And she's like, I'm smart, I'm decisive. And the whole concept, the name is absolutely ridiculous. And the goal of these women are, we're single women, we got to marry rich. And Lauren Bacall's whole plan is, you marry rich, then you don't have to work a day in your life. You can do this. But they are working so hard and they all have day jobs. And they're all working to get a man to fall in love with them. And so it feels like this almost catch 22, but the dumb blonde motif really came into style because of Marilyn Monroe. And then when she tried to shift into more dramatic roles, nobody would take her seriously. And it was always like, well, why aren't you just taking off, you know, get into something skimpier, take off your clothes. You're supposed to be dumb. You're not supposed to do this.
Yeah.
And the progression of those women. And then she stands toe to toe with Lauren Bacall, who is
an icon. Like, Lauren Bacall was one of the most foremost actresses who could stand toe to toe with somebody like Humphrey Bogart. You know, you look at things like Dark Passage, or you look at things,
Murder
on the Orient Express.
She was the witch of the she was the witch of the waste in Howl's Moving Castle. Mm. Yeah. For the English dub.
Yeah. Like, there was so many things. The fact that we are at this point and we're still having conversations like this only highlight the fact that we have yet to still grow as a society, not just cinematically, but holistically, in terms of recognizing that everybody deserves to have a voice and everybody deserves to have an opportunity to be creative and to create. And when you have something like this come up, it's like, yeah, let's support it. Let's see how it goes. I'm not looking at this film and saying, okay, how does it do against other female film? No, I am looking at this film and I am reviewing it against other films in general. You know, when I talk about this film, I'm not giving it any kind of special treatment because it doesn't need it. It mm-hmm. stands on its well. And there's a ton of people who continue to create. There's a ton of women who are continuing to create. Greta Gerwig has continuously shown how much of a powerhouse, not only in writing, but in directing, she is. Everything from when she did Lady Bird, which is, you know, a story about a girl based here in Sacramento, to her collaborative effort with Noah Baumbach.
I thought it was Baumbach.
Baumbach. I'm not sure.
It was her ex-husband.
Her ex-husband in Marriage Story, I believe.
No, he did that. That was all him, but that was based on their marriage.
But didn't they write it together?
Mm-mm.
No? Okay. No.
But she's done Little Women, mm-hmm. and she's... And again, Greta, we will talk about Greta especially definitely next week.
Mm-hmm.
But in this also, you have people like Adele Lim, who she stepped out from behind not only being able to write and write really well, but also create voices and give story that could fit into an hour and a half. And it didn't feel like it was super long. It didn't feel super cloying. And it maintained not only beautiful cinematography and spaces, mm-hmm. but it kept me engaged, even when we started to hit some of those third act kind of trip ups.
Mm. Or even some of the parts that we had mentioned were definitively not for kids to watch.
100%. But those were her casting. The casting choices, I believe, not only maintained the rudder and kept driving the story forward, but they also created balance without making it too cloying or dropping the ball entirely. So kudos to Adele and her team on that.
Well, and not to mention, it didn't make, and this isn't a negative thing, I promise. It didn't make the location of where they were at the main focus. They made it as the backdrop, as the living character, if you will, that stands in the background of this film, because the focus wasn't on where they were at, but the dynamic of their performances together. And I think that's very important, especially when it comes to films like this, where you are trying to create spaces for actresses to be as great as they can be in any setting, not just if they're in China or if they're in Korea or if they're in America or if they're in London or Paris or wherever they might be, that no matter where they are, they could act themselves out of a cardboard box if they wanted and they would still get Oscar-worthy performances. Mm. And I think this was done that well to where it wasn't a focus on, oh, okay, we're, you know, let's look at all of this. Let's look at everything we're at. We're focusing on everything China and everything this. It was, this is where we are. Let's perform kind of thing. What did you think, Spence?
What specifically? Performance-wise or?
Yeah, your thoughts.
Okay. Well, I'm just, you know, trying to stay on topic. I feel like the performances were like the best part of the movie. Especially how everyone just gelled together. Honestly, like that was the one thing in this movie that like I could just like if the movie went on for 30 more minutes, even though it didn't need to, I would have been quite happy just like spending more time with these characters interacting and bouncing off each other in whatever ridiculous nonsense that came up.
Yeah. Moving forward through this one, I want to go over highlights and issues, but I also want to talk about if there was anything else that really kind of stuck out pertaining to, you know, what you felt the message of the film was as well. And I want to go around the table. Let's start with Amy.
No, start with Spencer. I have taken up a lot of mic time today.
Okay, Spencer, let's start with you.
What?
Any issues, highlights, or anything?
No, I thought we were doing issues and highlights next.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
No, next.
I think the part of the message of the movie question was kind
okay,
of
okay. Issues and highlights. Let's just stick with that.
Okay,
you're.
Spencer's like, nope, not today.
Okay. He got stuck there. We had to kick him to reboot him.
Reboot.
Always reboot. Okay. I don't want to put this. I think it's not an issue or a highlight. It's just a statement. I feel like if you're going to go see this movie, you should know that it is very The Hangover adjacent versus not that. Because being surprised by that fact is kind of a lot. Middle of the movie, you're just like, oh, okay, I guess we're doing all these things now.
Yep.
Yeah. But if we want an actual highlight, I guess we will go with the impromptu pop music video that just started in the middle of the movie or near the end of the movie. Because I was like, I don't know what's happening or how we're going to actually board this plane without visas by just being in a music video. I mean, that was very creative. I never would have thought of that.
Amy.
So highlight for me, I think the soundtrack, which was really weird in spaces, but it fit really well, was really, really fun. And then the interaction when we finally get to China and we meet Deadeye and Lolo's family, and Audrey's like, suddenly she's part of the family. She doesn't really speak a lot of Mandarin. And she's there and the family just like embraces her. And she's like, oh my gosh, this is what it's supposed to feel like. Community is supposed to feel like. And she has a heart to heart with Deadeye. And Deadeye is screaming at the kid that's named Bao Bao, who keeps like, all they're trying to do is steal this kid's money. It's so great. It's literally like, Audrey's character comes up to Sabrina and goes, what are you playing? And Deadeye goes, I just made it up. And then just starts yelling, no, you lost, and stealing all the money. And it's great. But there's also a conversation, and it's wedged in such a great space where the sudden outbursts of comedy balance the seriousness of the topic of, I'm lonely. I know you think I'm ridiculous and you don't want to spend time with me. And I get it. I'm creepy, but I don't really have any friends. And Audrey's character is like, no, but you have all this family. And Deadeye says, no, they see me as like the outsider and I don't have any friends. And then they kind of slowly built this bridge. And it's punctuated with these literal screaming at this kid and stealing and taking his money. And I thought it was such a great way to address something that is running through the story. So definitely that. And the weird. Okay, at this table, it's already been established. I watch K-dramas. I watch a lot of K-dramas, and the fact that Stephanie Hsu is an actress in a Chinese drama, and then she has the one guy, but like with the giant painted eyebrows and like the fake looks of like, oh no, it was perfect.
Okay, here's the thing. It was so perfect. I forgot about that. I would watch that show. It was so ridiculous.
I got a couple for you. Don't worry, I got a couple for you. Yeah.
One of my highlights, which it's an actress that we really didn't get a chance to talk about, but the fact that her filmography is so large, and she has done so many different things through the course of her life. Lori Tan Chin, who plays Lolo and Deadeye's grandmother,
the one with the short hair.
Yeah, she is absolutely wonderful in this movie, and I felt like, even for her age, which in the film she's an older grandmother, she is completely youthful in every ounce of scenes that she's in. She is actually the grandmother to Awkwafina in Nora from Queens, which highlights all the zaniness of that woman in the film. She is so great. And I really did like how she kept up with the same comedy that the rest of the group was having, the same kind of nuance and fluidity, if you will, in every scene. I actually wanted more of her in the film, if we're talking like slight issues. The only other issue I had was the fact that towards the tail end of that K-pop sequence.
So many questions.
Listen, I blocked that out of my
mind. A body double was employed.
Oh, yeah.
Stephanie Hsu literally goes, there was a body double. And I was like, That's how we address this right now.
But the fact that we are made aware that Stephanie Hsu's character has a very unique tattoo that
in a very prominent place
just pretty much takes over a very prominent hidden private place on her body, and it is shown on a body double that particular tattoo. That was a little striking and out of nowhere to me, but the fact that it happened, I felt as shocked as the actors in the film were playing to be, because I'm like,
and I started
that's a dragon.
And I started
that's
laughing.
That's a devil. That's a demon.
I started laughing because it was so ridiculous. And then the follow-up dialogue was even more ridiculous.
The fact that her fiance showed up there, and I was like,
3 years fiance, good Christian fella. Which was brilliant.
Keep space for Jesus.
The 6 inches for Jesus joke, I'm not going to lie, that was everything at youth group. I was like, everybody knows
I
it.
I had war flashbacks when I heard that.
The other thing I wanted to highlight, I now, mind you, drug use is never something that we encourage here on the show. However, the way that whole scene proceeds and the fallout of it is probably the highlight of this film. And I know that does lend more towards the raunchy side of things as it progresses. But Stephanie Hsu is money in the bank when it comes to this scene, especially when immediately after. So in the scene, as we mentioned earlier, they end up in a train car
with a white woman,
who's a drug dealer, makes them all end up doing coke or whatever, like blows it in their face, and they have to hide all the drugs. And Stephanie Hsu ends up hiding some
balloons
up her rear end. Now, mind you, that's not okay. But the fallout of all that and kind of the chaos when they've been kicked off the train and so forth is just hilarious. And the way they wrote the way the rest of that scene to go, the rest of the following scenes was just, it was very masterful. I have to admit, it was very well choreographed and orchestrated. It was funny. So
I have one more highlight because it was weird. So farther down after that issue is done with the drugs and the drug dealer, and they meet up in the hotel with a randomly Lolo's like online man crush guy who's an actual Baron Davis. Was that his name?
Yeah.
He's an actual
Baron
like,
Davis.
Like he's an actual basketball player. I don't know. Sorry, Baron Davis.
No, he
this
is
first time I've heard of you, my man. Good
Same.
Job. But everybody goes their separate ways for whatever they're going to do. And Deadeye ends up tracking down the guy that's wearing the I Love BTS shirt and does the impromptu dance battle and then ends up hurt. He gets hurt. I'm like, this is perfect. And then it's against the chaos of all the other exploits of the evening that are going on with everybody else, including Lolo, who's just having a conversation with Baron and is talking about art and what their voice is. And there's just Deadeye having a K-pop dance battle and hurting part of their starting line for the basketball team. It's brilliant.
Yeah. That does bring me to the roundtable question. Now, I know there isn't one here, but there is one I do want to ask.
It's in your heart.
It is in my heart. So the roundtable question with all of this, all of the conversation that we've had is in regards to male-driven directors and writers, do you guys feel like, with everything being said, both good and bad, do you feel like any of this information should be, even if not taken in whole, do you think these writers, directors, these female actresses, do you think there's any part of the information that they're getting that they should adhere to? Like any of the criticism? And I say that in a way where like, to be better, you have to know the good and bad of any thing that you're doing. Being a podcaster, we obviously have to listen to both negative and positive. And sometimes there's always an opportunity where a negative can have a nugget of information to say, oh, you know what? He drones on about this, or this guy says these things too much, or this person says way too much. All of those pertaining to just me. But with that said, you know, hearing some of that, there is a little bit of truth. However, with the overwhelming amount of people who just run their mouths and having to discern it, Do you feel like there is any part of this information that could be beneficial to them?
I would say no, because when you're giving criticism, it has to be given in good faith. And I feel like for most, like especially like the one person that Amy was mentioning, that's not good faith criticism. Yeah.
Hilarious.
That's just ridiculousness. And I feel like you're not gonna glean anything good. Like Amy, do you think you gleaned anything actually useful from that?
From that one gentleman's,
yeah.
He might need to question his sexuality if you know, his own sex's flesh being flashed around is making him uncomfortable.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's on the credibility of the person, and I feel like a lot of these are not.
Amy?
I actually agree with Spencer. I also think that the continued oppression of the female sex and everything therein that is not a cisgendered white male has been oppressed and will continue to be oppressed because it's new and different. And, you know, the first time, if you don't come out the gates with a gajillion dollar blockbuster, you're a terrible human being and you're never going to make it. That has been perpetuated for more time and space than is necessary. So any type of criticism that's coming from that type of an audience should be wholly and utterly disregarded because it carries no weight and no measure to actually encourage or support somebody or their art. Now, if it's coming from an environment where they go, hey, I love what you tried to do. This is what I see. There were some issues. This is what I'd love to see you do it again or try again for the next time. Those type of conversations, those type of criticisms, critiques, reviews help breed a conversation of places you can get better. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you're just seeing people lambasting projects because they're like, you don't look like me, you don't act like me, and you don't sound like me, so I don't want you in my purview. Mm. And those are the ones that can go suck an egg.
Yeah. And the reason why I ask is because I wanted to get your guys' honest opinion, but truly, I agree wholeheartedly. The nature of the industry of Hollywood and the reviewers and the critics, we live in an age where everybody feels like they deserve to be a critic. And mind you, I am never one to stop anybody from pursuing a dream. However, if you are an ignorant person who chooses to view the world itself with your narrow mind without broadening it to understanding that there are people outside of your little peripheral that may not see the same way you do or may not look the same way you do or even sound, that doesn't mean that if it's different, it's bad. You need to be able to grow with the industry as well as a personal, you know, as a person, as a human being. Mm-hmm. So yeah, most definitely when it comes to any kind of credibility, your ability to be worldly and understanding of the things around you ultimately make you the best kind of person to see how the world can continue to change as long as you're with that kind of change as well. Mm-hmm. So wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table. Let's start with Amy. Does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles?
You know, you're always going to regret this every time that I give a really, really solid, like, way to
finish. You act like you're the only person that does that on the show.
I am the only person.
She's
just
the intern.
Kidding.
There you go.
All right. Of course, this film passes for me. As Eddie stated, I kind of put this on the docket. Sorry, Spencer, that there was that mix up with that other Joyride.
Oh, no, I didn't watch it yet. But
there's also another one from
2021. Hey, you haven't seen it yet?
Too.
We should see it.
There's another Joyride?
Yeah. Mm.
That, I don't know about happened. That one.
But this film was a love letter to the raunch comedy that has been perpetuating and living on the scene since, what, the mid-2000s? And has continued to go on. But it also maintains a level of camaraderie between their all-star cast and a search for identity and where they belong in the world, which is a question I believe is a truth universally known. So I'm going to give this Joyride a 3.5 out of 5 monocles.
She says all that and then she gives it a 3.5. Okay. She's like, this is a master. Leonardo da Vinci in female form. Oh my Lord. I'm going to give it a 1. Spencer. Why don't you, does Vin pass for real and how many monocles?
This movie passes for me. You know, I am not really into the super raunchy movies, But I feel like the characters of this movie kind of really, like, they brought it together in a way that, like, really worked well for me. Mm-hmm. A lot more than I would have thought going into it, knowing what it was going to, well, like, knowing it was more like that. But it was really a great movie, and it actually had a very good heart, especially near the end of the movie when, like, they're trying to tie all of it together, especially when what's his name, Daniel Day Kim, especially when he enters the movies to, like, you know, just like fill in the rest. I was like, this is actually quite fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna give this a 4 out of 5. I was actually really impressed.
Yeah.
In terms of pass or fail, the film does pass for me. It does have fluidity, as I mentioned. It does create a flow that resolves itself and gives you a satisfying feeling when you finish the film. I appreciated the writing in this film. I appreciated the directing. I appreciated every effort to make this movie about the women in this film and not about the location in this film. And that's pretty big, because you look a lot of films, look at a lot of films like this prior to. We mentioned Joy Luck Club. During that time, yes, it was a substantial film for its era, but we don't need to make sure that the places that we're going to and the things that are there are the focal point when there's phenomenal actors and actresses there on screen as well. Let them take us to the place and not be there, you know, as a location. In terms of monocles, this is where I kind of, you know, I talked about at the beginning, I wasn't too sure on the fence in terms of which way I was going to swing, but I honestly feel, for every effort that this film has and everything that it is continuing to do, I do have to give it a 3.75 out of 5. Honestly,
I give me trash about a 3.5.
No, I appreciate every effort for this film. Like Spencer mentioned, it's not always my cup of tea, and I do appreciate everybody doing everything that they did in this film. I do appreciate the efforts by the whole cast, by the directors, by the writers. And honestly, this movie gives hope and a rise for people to understand that, you know what? Films with minorities don't have to just be about minorities. Mm. And films about women don't just have to be about women. They are actors. They are performers. They are, you know, mainstays in their industry. So let's give them the respect that's due. So a 3.75 from me. And yeah, so that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosophers.com. There we have over, allegedly, 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, even buddy comedy movies, as you can tell. if you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out over on social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. There you can catch up with all our hijinks as well as images and stuff that we post, including our in-show segments. That includes Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found where?
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane on Scene on Instagram and Instagram only. So if you find it someplace else, it's probably not me.
Do you have people who are trying to steal your identity?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay,
we need to talk
about this after the episode.
Okay.
So check us out over on the socials, as we stated, facebook.com/filmlosophers and Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune in to your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow or a subscribe. Listen in. Listen to this episode. Did you hear it? Did you hear everything that we said?
Listen to it again.
And if you like,
another time.
Yeah. And and don't keep doing that every time you hear this. But if you get a chance, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes.
What was that?
Yes.
Sorry, we've got Barbie and Haunted Mansion coming up. So
she transitioned into, like,
sound. What does that have to do with anything?
Grim Grimming Ghost comes out to socialize.
In Barbie?
They might.
They don't.
I don't know what's happening here.
Ghoul Barbie. Yes, let us go.
What?
That's an off-topic conversation.
It's Barbenheimer, not Barben House.
It could be Barben Mansion.
Well, anyways, that about wraps up this episode. So from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Still intern Amy.
Class dismissed.